This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.
How's your 2021 going, everybody?
Oh, wow. The memes. The memes. I'm living for the memes.
Yeah. I mean, look, we got to get through this however we can. And if Twitter needs to make jokes for us to survive the Civil War, then that's what it is. Okay. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's. I took myself off of the news because Wednesday the 6th was actually my birthday. So yeah.
What a fun day for you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
We got something for you.
Wow. Yeah. It's, you know, I thought we'd seen everything we were going to see in 2020 from murder hornets to wildfires to pandemics and, you know, a civil war. Seemed like, okay, so we're still in it. 2021 is not going to be any different from 2020, is it?
Dude, you described it as Civil War LARPing, and I still can't stop laughing about it.
It really is. God. It's fucking, I just, everyone, chill out.
That's the advice that we've given you for this podcast.
Exactly. I'm like, I need a podium right now because I'd be like, everyone, have yourself a Twisted Tea. Chill out.
Get a Snickers and a Twisted Tea.
Exactly.
I mean, in all seriousness, I know we're making light of the situation. We don't mean for it to be. We understand how absolutely serious this is. But at this point, I think for the sake of our mental health,
right,
we just need to be able to talk about this with some amount of levity because
I know. Yeah, I'm just like, I literally was like, I feel numb at this point. You know what I mean? And I'm just like,
totally.
I want to watch Bridgerton and shut the door to my apartment and like make it all go away. Like I can't.
First and foremost, can we talk about Bridgerton? Because Christina, you and I have seen it already. And then having Keegan watch it and like live text us as she's going through it.
Yes, I did that exactly. Like I was like, they'll know what I'm talking about if I text something absolutely random to them right now as I watch Bridgerton. And listen, did I just eat every moment of that show up? Yes, I did. Just num, 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 num.
I
loved it. It was visually fantastic. I love a period drama. There's nothing I love more than like a brooding will they, won't they, regency relationship. Okay, I'm in it. I love it.
Soundtrack was so fire too.
Soundtrack slapped. Soundtrack slapped hard. And overall, I enjoyed it very much. Now, were there some very toxic relationship tropes that are going to negatively affect an entire generation of young women? 100%. And two, was the main conflict between the main couple absolutely absurd?
Yes.
Yes. 100%. Yes. Like, so could have been solved with one trip to a couples therapist. Really, really think it could have been. But
Keegan, now having seen Legends of the Fall like we just did, we just did our Legends of the Fall episode for our Crazy in Love movie for our patrons. And I will tell you that anything I thought that was just the slightest bit problematic or problematic at all in Bridgerton was made null and void and negated completely by the fact that there was a generation of people who were in love with Tristan.
Yeah, yeah. I'd have to say that Gen Z has it easy if Bridgerton is their toxic relationship. relationship that they're looking at, because watching Legends of the Fall and Brad Pitt in that movie, and really, like you said, remembering how much people were like, hot, just Legends of the Fall, long hair, Brad Pitt posters on so many teenage girls' walls. Oh. And watching this character, this was a movie that I had not seen before. Why? Same. How are any of us okay? Like, how are any of us in remotely healthy relationships? Like, having grown up with this kind of being like the ideal, the pinnacle of romance. Like, whoa.
I think it's because I didn't watch it at that age, maybe, is why I'm in a healthy, strong relationship.
I was reading all of the books and watching those movies, thinking to myself, I love nothing more than a project. Call me the fix it, because I'm going to come in. I want the bad behavior. I want the bad boy. Want you to.
Same though. Me, it was James Dean. It was watching James Dean movies and being like, yeah, I want a guy who can't control his anger and breaks his fist pounding against a desk because he's so damaged from his daddy issues. Yes, I want that. Like, I wanted a Mr. Rochester who had a very complicated relationship with a crazy wife in the attic. I wanted all of that bananas bullshit, because if our love could overcome it, it meant that our love was special. And like, oh, what a mess. What a toxic lesson.
Speaking of toxic, well, I mean, I can't say it's a toxic relationship. That's outside looking in. But I know big news out this week is Kim and Kanye coming to a close. And I know Chris had to be especially mad about the Civil War, like, interrupting that news.
Yeah.
Kris Jenner. Yeah.
I thought you meant my Chris. And I was like, why would he care?
No, Kris Jenner's like, got to be super pissed that didn't drop as hard as it was supposed to drop.
100%. Yeah, she was going to make a meal of that little morsel, and that did not go down the way they planned, I'm sure. But I anticipated that they would eventually get divorced.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, a person can only take so much. Like, it seemed to me like that was probably where they were headed. And unfortunately, you know, there were those really sad pictures of Kim crying in the car talking to Kanye and things like that. And I was like, yeah, this looks like not good, you know?
Yeah.
Looks but like the end.
What I didn't expect were all of the like conspiracy theories about how Jesus. Kanye West is having an affair with Jeffree Star.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
People are what? So where did that fucking come from? Bored. It comes from the fact that we don't have dick else to do but stare at our computer or our television and then just make shit up. Like, there's not a bar to go to or a restaurant or a movie. So we're just going to sit around and that's how conspiracy theories foment. And there's no reason for this theory to exist other than the fact they both live in Wyoming, which is a rather large state.
Yes.
That's the reason. It's ridiculous.
I didn't even know that much.
Because, I didn't either.
Because the Civil War was happening, my mind was preoccupied and I didn't get to devote as much time as I maybe would have liked to just reading about this drama, because I probably would have. I would have been like, you know, let's see what's on ET, you know, and like figure that out. And I didn't really have like the time to do that this week. So I had no idea. And like this Jeffree Star theory came out of nowhere. Nowhere to me.
Literally nowhere.
I was like, are they friends? Do they know each other somehow? Like, right. I don't
They've
get
never
it.
Met.
I don't get it.
I literally was like, I don't get so wait. So what you're saying is that Kanye is living in Wyoming. They're not in Calabasas anymore?
No,
he's Kanye's a ranch, I think.
Has a ranch in Wyoming. He's been there for a while.
Okay.
Cause I mean, I don't know. A lot of celebrities, I think, have ranches in Wyoming, which makes me like side eye Wyoming. I'm like, what's going on over there? Is this like something awesome I don't know about?
A lot of celebrities have ranches in New Mexico, too. There's like a lot of celebrity ranches in New Mexico. I don't know. Maybe it's just like big, wide open spaces where they can buy cheap property. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I found interesting is on our page, somebody shared this like snippet of an article, and the headline is "Woman Fails to Get a Husband by 40, so she married herself."
Huh?
Yasmin Elby recently married herself, yes, herself, in a gorgeous candlelight ceremony in Houston, Texas. Close friends and family attended and watched as she shared vows with herself. Yasmin made a promise to herself that if she had not found a husband by the time she turned 40, that she would marry herself. And that promise she kept. Her three sisters were her bridesmaids, and her mother gave her away. Well, technically gave her to herself. This is where we're at.
I have mixed feelings about this.
Yes.
Well, I will say that throughout the years, we've shared people marrying ghosts their dogs. Or like
inanimate
other inanimate
objects.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like this is not as bad.
I agree. I mean, well, it does.
The sentiment I don't disagree with. Like the sentiment of like, I'm going to choose to love myself and put myself first and devote to myself and make promises to myself that I vow to keep. Like all of that stuff, I'm on board with all of that. Yeah, I don't think that's a problem.
But is this a legally binding government thing? Like is
it
she...
can't be.
Yeah,
it can't be. And then like, what does it say about our society that we feel like you need to have a marriage at all? Like to me, that's kind of weird. Like this idea that like, I promised myself if I didn't find a husband by 40 that I would marry myself. Couldn't you just throw yourself like a kick-ass party? I just. The marriage aspect of it makes me scratch my head because I just don't think that that's necessary. But right. Do you? You're not hurting anybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Maybe she got some presents and shit. So, you know.
Exactly. Look, you know, for the presents
she's like,
alone,
I needed
it might be
a KitchenAid.
Honestly, yeah. For real, those things are expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually found something that I want to ask you guys about. It's kind of a serious relationship thing that I found on Reddit, and I just would like to get your two cents. Okay. So someone wrote into relationship advice, and she said, okay, so my boyfriend, who is 24, and I, she's a 23-year-old female, have been dating for nearly a year. In the beginning, he used to not fart around me, and then one day it all blasted off, literally.
Oh, Jesus.
He has not stopped farting. It seems like every second there's a fart sound happening, and I used to think it was funny and laugh, but now I'm just over it. How do I tell him without hurting his feelings? I mean, it's something that is getting between us because he farts everywhere and all the time.
Mm-mm.
Keegan's dying.
No.
Just dying. I know it.
Listen. First of all, it's weird that there was nothing in the beginning and now it's something that's happening, which tells me that it is somewhat under his control. Like, you know, like he can control it in some way, or he wouldn't have, in the beginning, it wouldn't have been like that.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, like uncontrollable things happen. So my thought is that one time, like something slipped and she laughed about it. And so now he thinks like game
every time is
on.
Fine. And yet all the time would be a real issue for me. Like I just feel like you gotta leave something to the imagination at some point. Like that feels very comfortable less than a year into a relationship as well.
Just go
like,
ham on your ass.
Well, just, you gotta. I kind of agree with you, Keegan, in that I like to keep it sexy. You know,
yeah.
Like things happen and everything.
Which is fine.
Like, we all have bodies,
mm-hmm.
But I'm not your bro. Like I don't want to be your bro. Like I want to be your girlfriend. So, yeah, I don't think I would like a never-ending barrage of like being farted on.
Yeah, agreed. And like as far as how to bring it up, I mean, I remember being 23, but let me tell you now, as who I am now, just say it. Like, yeah. Just be like, I actually don't like it when you do that. You know, of course, I love you anyway. And I know that, like, stuff happens. These are our bodies. If we're going to be together for the long term, like, these things are going to happen. That's fine. But all of the time, is it necessary that it happen all of the time? And if it is, if it's something that you really can't control, maybe you should see a doctor, or we should do an elimination diet to figure out what the fuck is going on here.
That was what I was going to say. Like, you may be eating something wrong.
Yeah, that's not normal.
Right. You know? To fart constantly all the time. Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if it's something that really bothers you, you should voice that.
Well, and also I feel like getting into the habit of having the hard conversations, not just about like farting, but real like relationship stuff and also like sex stuff. You got to bridge that eventually. If you want something real and long term, having those mm-hmm. real conversations is something that's going to have to happen. Otherwise, let me tell you, like, it was a problem in my marriage, not being able to really voice the real stuff, and that stuff builds up. You can make it last until you can't anymore.
That's right.
And then it's just a big old ball of resentments. So if you don't want to be farted on, speak up now or forever hold your peace and your nose, because it probably stinks.
Exactly.
Okay, so I have a question for you guys. I don't know if we've ever talked about this. I think I have on the podcast before, but I was thinking, since it's the year 2021, mm-hmm. and this is a real stretch, and 21 is the legal drinking age. Mm-hmm. We should fuck, marry, kill our first drinks. Like the first thing you ever got drunk on, accompanied by the story.
Okay, proceed. This is awesome. The first thing I got drunk on was whiskey sours. And I was a camp counselor.
Delicious.
At the time. And I got drunk and went swimming, which I don't recommend.
Oh no.
Sounds, glad I'm still alive.
Sounds like a way to die at summer camp. Yeah.
And, right.
And then passed out on one of the cot bunk bed things in a cabin. So,
hold on. Christina, were you in charge of children during this?
You were,
no,
weren't you?
No. No. We had, it was a sleepover camp or a sleepaway camp. And we had the kids like Sunday through Thursday, and then they got picked up like Friday morning. So we have Friday night and Saturday, all day Saturday off. So it was on one of the off times.
That sounds freaking amazing. Like that sounds like so much fun.
Considering like the person that ran our camp, when I think back on it now, I'm like, holy shit. Like how is this A, legal? But like I'm pretty sure the camp manager was like 21. The rest of us were all like 16 and 17 year olds.
Wow. Yeah. This just sounds like problem.
Oh, a yeah. problem. I had a lot of firsts.
I bet.
It sounds like we've heard so a much of fun. Like, I wish I had done something like that. Like, that's not, my parents, I'm sure, are very grateful that I didn't. But like, man, looking back at me in high school, I'm like, God, that would have been a blast.
It was. Yeah, it was jealous. A blast. Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
all
what
right,
about
Cass,
you guys?
What's yours?
Okay, so this one's tough for me because technically the first time I got drunk, I was 3. I was at, my dad used to race motorcycles and we were at one of his races. And, you know, this is the early 80s. So you're talking about parents who were like not necessarily totally watching us.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I do have a vague recollection of being thirsty and going around and picking up cans and drinking out of them. Well, that's what I was doing. I was walking around picking up beer cans and drinking them. So that technically is the first time I apparently got drunk. My mom tells the story. Like, she's like, we were like, where'd Cassie go? And we look over and you're stumbling drunk. Like, I'm like,
how?
Really? So that explains a lot about me. So, I mean, we can go with beer. I mean, that is my
That's the first time you got drunk.
Well, We'll go with beer for you.
Good old beer.
And classic. You know it was like Coors Light or something, yes, too. Like
PBR.
Oh, God.
This is the 80s.
Oh, God. Okay. Mine, and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, maybe not, but mine was Strawberry Fields Boone's Farm.
Mm. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Which is like I hesitate to even call it wine. Like, I think it says wine on the label, but it's...
Yeah.
It's not like a cooler, a wine cooler, right?
Yeah, but it comes in a wine bottle. Like, it comes in the full-size bottle, not like the little, like, Smirnoff Ice bottles. And I drank, like, an entire bottle of Strawberry Fields was the name of the flavor.
Yes, Boone's Farm. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, looking back, I'm like, wow, I thought I was invincible because I drank, like, that entire bottle, no hangover, because when you're, like, 19... which is
yeah, your body burns that shit off right away. Yeah. You're gonna live forever.
Yeah, yeah.
I now have a memory that was just triggered by that. I don't even remember what I drank, but I just remember Boone's Farm. Like, I was just thinking about that time in my life of Boone's Farm, you know. But I wasn't a drinker in high school. I didn't drink.
Me neither.
Just because, like, I didn't enjoy it. Like, it wasn't something I enjoyed. And I don't know. My dad was a drinker, so I just wasn't me. I smoked a lot of pot. That was more my speed back then. And so, but one time, this is a great story. I, of course, told my, I don't know if I might have shared this with you guys, but we told my mom that I was spending the night with my friend Lisa, and my friend Lisa was telling her dad that she was spending the night with me, and then her dad found out we were lying.
Classic move.
Chasing after us. We were like running through like this area we called the New Division where we grew up, and we were like jumping fences. I had a fucking cut down my leg. We ended up out in the country at this friend of ours' house, got like shit face wasted, and he had a pool.
Of course he did.
And my friend was in her like bra and underwear getting in the pool, and here comes my motherfucking mom.
No.
Yep.
Oh, God.
She and my best friend's mom, my friend Sarah's mom, came out and found me, tracked my ass down and found me. And when I tell you, my mom called my friend Lisa every name in the book, because she's definitely standing in her like underwear and bra in the pool. And I'm drunk off my ass. That was... yoinks.
Oh, man. Cringe city. But you know what? I would be like, hey, mom, remember when you let me get drunk at 3 years old?
Oh.
You can't tell me what to do ever again.
Yeah, that would not have been a good lived. I would not have lived. I would not be here today had I made that argument with my mom.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
She child protective services.
She'd have slapped the life out of me.
I remember senior year of high school, the really like popular thing to drink was Zimas with Jolly Ranchers in them.
Yes.
What a Zimas hangover. With Jolly God, what Ranchers. A hangover. That, yes. That sounds like Sugar City, man.
It sounds might terrible. Have been,
that might have been what we were drinking that night.
Oh, my
I've
God.
I've never had Zima. For
disgusting.
Me, it was Smirnoff Ice. Smirnoff yes. Ice was the thing. Smirnoff yeah. Ice and Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Mm-hmm. Oh. It all sounds like heartburn now.
Oh, God. It sounds like an immediate headache. Mm-hmm. I've been doing or trying to do dry January. I did have a glass of wine on Wednesday, last Wednesday,
for
on
Christina's
account
birthday.
Of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And our democracy mm-hmm. crumbling. But yes, yes, both of those things. And... But up until then, I hadn't been drinking, and I thought that it was drinking that was making me have a headache in the morning, every morning. It turns out that that's just what happens to you when you get older. I just wake up with a headache now. It's just who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So whiskey sour, beer, and Strawberry Fields Boone Farm. Whew. Good.
I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm
this
doing.
This is hard.
Right. I mean, I'm going to marry whiskey sour. It's okay. Classy. It's delicious. It's classic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to marry whiskey sour without the egg white. Egg white's unnecessary in it. I don't need my alcoholic beverages to froth, so mm-hmm. that's fine. I am going to fuck Strawberry Fields Boone's mm-hmm. Farm. Mm-hmm. Strawberry Fields Boone's Farm is sweet but sexy.
It feels picture, like you're going to be doing it like on top of hay. I don't know why that came into my head.
You see, I had a completely different mental image. Like I was thinking,
it's got the
like,
word farm in it.
I feel like Strawberry Fields Boone's Farm is like, what's her name? Ginger from Gilligan's Island. Like, I feel like it's like you got some pink gingham happening, mm-hmm. right? Wholesome. Like it's a good old like country girl, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. You're going to have a good time. So yeah, I'm going to fuck. Fine if it's on hay, although that feels like a rash, but okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna kill beer. Beer makes me like the mental image of who I have as beer in my head
yes.
is not somebody that I yeah. really want to marry or fuck. So gonna just eliminate that one altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this one's tough.
It is.
This one's really tough. I actually think I'm going to switch it up. I think that I'm going to marry beer. I think
wow.
beer is classic. Beer is grilling in the summertime. Beer is relaxing at the beach. Beer is, you know, throwing the ball around in the backyard with
beer
the kid.
Beer is never going to make you feel bad about yourself.
Yeah. Mm. Beer, yeah. Beer's just like, you know, he's solid. He's solid.
You're not too good for beer. You
that's
know what I
mean? Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Beer's also going to make you, you know what I mean? I'm like, beer landed me. Okay. He's going to be grateful. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's like,
beer will not mansplain anything to beer, you. That's no, fucking yeah. sure.
Beer has married up. Mm-hmm. Right. And so beer is not going to complain. Beer is going to have a manicure. But if you marry beer, you have to commit yourself to being in a cul-de-sac in the suburbs with a yeah. manicured yard. Like yep. that's your life. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's an okay. That's a good life.
Yeah. I'm going to fuck Whiskey Sour because I feel like now the ones that I had in Kentucky back in the day did not have egg whites in them. They were not good. The fancy whiskey sour. It was literally mm-hmm. like that cheap ass fluorescent mix. Sour mix.
Oh no.
And a really cheap whiskey. I mean,
oh no.
Not good. But I have yuck. Had since then good whiskey sours, which are incredible. They're really good. They are classic. So in my head, I'm going with the like fancy version. I'm like,
100, oh, me yeah. too.
I'm gonna fuck that penthouse whiskey that's sour. Right. All night long. It's going to be classy. We're going to talk about literature.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're going to read Dylan Thomas together. It's going to mm-hmm. be great.
Yeah.
And he may try to mansplain.
He might try to mansplain. That is true. Like, yeah, that is
you'll
true.
You'll get a little bit of that.
You might get a little bit of it, but I feel like he's going to be intellectually stimulating. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And you got a little bit of the sour and a little bit of the sweet. It's like drinking a Sour Patch Kid, and I appreciate it.
And then I got to kill Boone's Farm. Yeah,
wow. It's just rude. It's
too sweet. And I just like it doesn't have enough bite for me. I need yeah, something with a little true. Bit more
punch.
Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Valid.
I am going to switch it as well. I'm going to marry Whiskey Sour because I think Whiskey Sour can be just that, right? Christina, it can be Kentucky. It can be like a night out by the campfire, or it can be a high roller, high rise. And I like that type of diversity in my relationship. I like to be able to go camping and, you know, in a tent, but also have the same amount of enjoyment in a fancy, classy ballroom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm here for the Whiskey Sour. I am going to fuck beer. And the reason I'm going to fuck beer is because it's just going to be just, you know, it's going to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. beer does, you know what I mean? Like it's just gonna, it's gonna
there's
get down
no,
and dirty and
no
done.
Frills. Yeah, that's it kind of right. feels like the perfect like
fuck for
lay
me.
For you. It's just
perfect.
Yeah. Just bing, bang, boom, zip, zap.
Happy. Yeah. Done. We're happy. I'm probably not going to have that big of a hangover the next morning. It's going to be just, you know, just light and enjoyable.
Right.
And I am going to kill Boone's Farm for the hangover alone.
That's valid.
I feel like Boone's Farm might try to kill me. It looks sweet and candy like on the outside, but really on the inside, it's Tristan from Legends of the Fall.
Is it Nice Guy TM?
But that's how you know that Boone's Farm is going to be a great lay, because Boone's Farm is insane, right? Like, Boone's Farm is not going to be able to let you go, and they're going to have crazy eyes the next day, and you know it, but that night is going to be a great time.
You're going to have a great time. You're going to be dealing with a wall of text for sure.
Yes.
You're not wrong. Oh, man.
Oh, that was a good one. Good idea, Keegan. I like that.
Thank you.
Well, you guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Yes. That's
for me.
Cool.
And we're back. All right. Take it away, Cassie.
All right. So my story comes from Single Society, which we've gotten a few from through Reddit. And this story says, I met Aaron, I'm hoping this is a fake name, on Hinge during a dark period of time where I found myself completely powerless to a man in uniform.
Uh-oh.
No matter how big a douchebag he actually was.
Oh, no.
Aaron was a deliciously beefy New York City firefighter with a remarkably amusing sense of humor and an affinity for good, smoky old fashioned. I mean, all of this sounds up and up so far. Aaron made the trek from Long Island to the Upper East Side to a relatively obscure speakeasy so I could sample what he claimed was an old-fashioned far superior to any other.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Right.
I'm liking this so far. When I entered the sparsely lit saloon, I found Aaron waiting for me inside a red tufted booth, looking so good I already wanted to slide down his fire pole.
Oh.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. After some more lighthearted flirtatious chatter, we bonded over the fact that we were both navigating the dating scene while dealing with an asinine stigma for having been previously married. Oh, but that's when he dropped the bomb. Aaron was still married. This was news to me, considering he had spoken of his divorce as if it was practically ancient history. Nope. In fact, his wife had filed for divorce just shy of 2 weeks, 2 weeks prior. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm going to need some more information to figure out how I should feel about that.
Cue the fucking floodgates. Aaron began to cry as he unloaded every ounce of emotional baggage on me.
He wasn't ready.
2 weeks. You imagine?
Women are not your therapists.
Yes. We address this in our Legends of the Fall.
Somebody to do this shit with.
He unloaded every ounce of emotional baggage on me about where his marriage went wrong, what he would have done differently, and how he is working hard to move forward towards a better future.
My guy, this is a first date.
Yeah. Though I was happy for Aaron's poignant awakening, it would have been lovely if, I don't know, it didn't happen on a first fucking date. Now, one would think I would finish my drink and be on my merry way, but no, not me. Why? Probably because I hadn't been laid in months. Not only am I a total sucker for a man in uniform, but clearly a man with severe emotional distress. So back to my apartment we went. Aaron blew his load in approximately 42 seconds, then attempted to finger me, but was clearly mistaking my vagina for a turkey he was eagerly trying to stuff.
Oof.
After another sounds fucking terrible. After some rather vanilla sexual relations, but hey, I fulfilled my uniform fantasy. I was hoping he would head home. No such luck. Aaron slept until roughly 11:30 and only awoke from his deep slumber after I purposely made a ruckus in order to expedite his departure.
Again, I feel like that's unacceptable. Like, even at a sleepover, like if I was sleeping over at my friend's house in like middle school, I would probably get up and moving a lot earlier than I normally would if I was at my house, because it feels very awkward to sleep until noon in someone else's house when you don't know what their routine is or like what they've got going on that day. Like, weird.
Yeah, I don't like
Erin, I was wondering if this is 11:30 at night. Like, she's like, dude, jet.
Oh, shit. She kicks him out that evening.
She's like, dude, go. Erin lollygagged around my apartment, completely oblivious to the fact that I wanted him gone. He enjoyed some cereal and relaxed on my sofa, wearing only his skivvies, watching sports highlights. Dude, what?
Is he moving in? Also, like, I'm like, we've talked about like the toxic tropes you see of relationships and a whole lot of things. But man, nothing is clearer than like, can you leave, than actually saying, hey, I've got stuff to do, or like, can you bounce? Like, actually like saying the words like
I gotta go. Yeah. You gotta go. Finally, I'd had enough, so I said, so don't you want to head out and get home or something? He says, I don't know. I wasn't sure if you wanted to hang out. I don't really have any plans. Erin then began to stall and attempted to drum up aimless conversation. When I finally told him I wanted to get on with my day, he relented and asked if he would be able to shower first. Why? Because Erin was homeless. Though Erin was gainfully employed, he had been living at the firehouse for at least 6 months because irresponsible spending decisions made it impossible for him to find a proper housing he could afford.
No.
He said the firehouse had only had communal showers and it would be nice to have some privacy for a change. Erin made use of my facilities and left shortly after, but not before making it smell like something died in my bathroom, causing my 350 square foot studio to reek putridly.
Oh, this, no.
My friend, is why you should listen to with your heads and not your vaginas.
Yeah. No, I mean, the other side of the coin is I was definitely dating before my divorce was finalized, but that's something that you gotta be, I think, upfront about before you go out, because for some people it is a deal breaker.
You have to know yourself well enough to know if you're ready to be back out there like that. Yeah. Like, because it's not everyone else's responsibility to take care of all of your to carry your emotional baggage if you haven't dealt with it yet. Like, you need to take care of that first. It's your responsibility to do that, so you're not offloading on other people, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing too was like, I was definitely dating really soon after everything happened, and I was making sure to be like, listen, I'm not into anything super serious. I'm looking to meet people and keep it light, you know? So
yeah,
that's the other thing. I definitely didn't want to use anybody as a therapist, you know? Like,
know thyself and where you're at in your situation, you know? True. 2 weeks, that's fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're not in that headspace,
for sure. Okay, mine I got in from our email, and I don't want to read the subject line because it's definitely a giveaway. So the message is, hi, ladies. I decided to write in after learning about the podcast from my roommate, who has been a longtime listener. Yay! Thanks, roommate. I'll be using fake names from here on out. I had recently gotten out of a long-term relationship. I was 21 at the time, and the breakup was rough on me. As I was in the relationship for so long, I had never experienced dating apps and thought it might be fun to try one out. I don't know if fun's the right word I would use for dating apps, but
maybe when you're 21.
Initially, being on the app was a confidence boost, but I quickly realized that most men I came across while swiping were douchebags. However, there was one guy I started talking to, we will call him Mick, who actually seemed genuine and nice. My roommate had a French class with him and really hyped him up and said he seems nice and liberal over Zoom class. He wanted to meet up, and I excitedly agreed to my first date in 5 years. The day came around, and I was feeling pretty exhausted as I had worked an early 5 a.m. shift, then endured a 2-hour CPR training before the date even started. I was tired and drained, but My roommate helped me get ready and gave me a pep talk before the date. Mick did not have a car, so I had to pick him up. The date was scheduled for 4 p.m. Thank you, Keegan. I called that. But I had not heard from him all day. Half an hour past 4 p.m., I still hadn't heard from him. I dropped my roommate off at work, and about an hour and a half after that, he finally messaged me to say he was ready for the date.
Whenever you're ready, dude.
I hate that. I am somebody that likes plans. I like solid, concrete plans. I understand that that's not everybody's thing. Some people like to fly by the seat of their pants and just loosey-goosey their way through life.
That's not me.
So,
especially if I've taken the time to get ready. We've talked about that on this podcast before. Like, I plan when I'm going to do my face and get ready based on when I'm going to meet you, okay? Like, I don't want to be sitting around full glam in my living room waiting for you to get your shit together.
Yeah. I drove back on campus to pick him up. He walks up to my car with greasy hair, wearing a pair of shoes that can only be described as water shoes or a hybrid of toe shoes.
No. What were you doing? What took you so long to get ready?
He gets in the car and smells of BO. It's not that he doesn't look like his dating profile. He just looks like the worst possible version of his profile.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Dude, if you're not even going to shower for me, if that's the level that you're bringing to the table right off the bat, then, like, no. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not into that. Okay, so I drove him back to mine, and the date started out okay. We watched a TV show together and played video games for a couple of hours. Then, given that I had been awake since 4 a.m., I was ready to drop him off. I told him I had to pick my roommate up from work and that I could drop him off on the way. But instead, he turns to me and says, "Well, I'm really enjoying myself, and I'd love to spend more time with you." So it looks like we have a theme on this podcast. just people moving in. I'm not great at turning guys down, and the date wasn't going poorly, all things considered. So I let him come along with me to pick up my roommate.
Oh, honey.
Oh, no.
Before my roommate gets in the car, Mick says, "I'm really hungry. Can we stop by the grocery store on the way back?"
No.
Grocery store?
He is using her to run his errands. Uh-uh.
At this point, the vibe kind of changes, and I'm starting to feel slightly off about him and not interested, but I go along with it. We get back to the apartment, and the roommate takes her food to the room, leaving me with Mick. Mick grabs raspberries he bought from the store, then turns to me and excitedly says, "Oh yeah, by the way, my two front teeth are connected to my retainer," and proceeds to remove his retainer to display his lack of teeth.
Here we go again. Here we go again.
No, listen, what you're saying is you have a partial. That isn't a retainer with teeth in it. What?
I was so taken aback. Not that there's anything wrong with people who do not have teeth. I just didn't expect it at all. I think I hesitated before saying, "Oh no, cool." But
oh no, cool. That's the best response. Because, like you said, the thing out loud that was supposed to stay in your brain.
Like the
oh no part, like, was supposed to not come out of your mouth.
Right. Oh no, cool.
Oh my God.
I just remember him talking about Lord of the Rings characters that he wants to dress up for as for Halloween. And then he sneezed on me.
No.
I was so grossed out, but I didn't want to embarrass him, so I just pretended it didn't happen. My roommate came out of her room, took one look at Mick, and then sent me a text with one line: "Where'd his teeth go?"
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Dude, I really miss. There is something very nostalgic. I think this about living with your girlfriends in your very early 20s.
I never got to experience that. I moved in with my boyfriend when we were like 20. You know, I lived by myself for like a year, and then I've been living with Anthony ever since. I never got to live with girlfriends. It sounds like a blast.
It's really something. There's something very just unique about that situation. But yeah, it's so great. Anyways, my roommate then invited our other friend over. She happened to know Mick from freshman year of college, and he was a part of an old friend group of hers. When she arrives, Mick jumps up from his seat, throws his teeth back in at rapid speed before she can even notice him. He excitedly greets her. "Hey, great to see you." I was ready for the date to end, so when she came in, I signaled for her to sit next to me. Everyone caught up and was talking together, which was a nice break from me having to engage in unwanted conversation with him. As soon as she arrived, Mick's personality completely changed. He started wandering around our apartment, going through our stuff, bragging about himself. And he even jumped on my roommate's exercise bike like he was starting an exercise routine. My roommate and I signaled several times that we were tired and it's probably time to call it a night. Finally, he says, "Okay, well, I'm ready to go."
Oh, I hate him so much.
Given I had to drive him back and was running on very little sleep, my roommate offered to come along with me to keep me awake. I gratefully accepted, dreading a car ride alone with Mick and fearing he'd try to make a move. As I drove him back, he said, "I really liked hanging out with you. We should hang out again." I was tired and could not hide my lack of enthusiasm and responded with a weak, "Yeah." At this point, my roommate had long picked up that I was not interested and was doing her best to hold back from laughing in the back seat. Once she and I returned to the apartment, I called our friend to ask if she knew Mick didn't have front teeth, and she had no idea despite having known him for 4 years, whereas this was my first time meeting him.
He just popped him right out.
The rest of the night laughing and cringing about the situation, which is like the best part. At least we got each other, and that's the story of my worst date. That's what I love the most about it, was that at the end, getting with your girlfriends and dishing.
Yes.
Like, that's what this fucking podcast is. So there you go.
100%.
Oh, my gosh.
What a story. I think I'm going to use "oh no, cool" like in my daily life. Oh no, cool.
Oh no.
Okay. This story comes from Reddit. I was set up with a guy by a good friend, so I was excited. We texted back and forth for a few days and finally decided to meet up. We decide to get dinner in my town. Plans are set, and then he asks for a ride.
Wow, we got three for three in this one.
No big deal. We were college age at the time. I get in my car, punch in the address, and he's an hour away in, like, the cuts. And I'm guessing the cuts means, like, the boonies, like, yeah. Like, middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. I get to the address, and I'm like, this can't be right. It's literally a shed leaned up against a fence.
Oh, okay? No.
No worries. Maybe I can't see the rest of the property or something. Or maybe this is his home and he's just struggling right now. No skin off my nose. We had good chemistry texting. I feel... Okay.
Oh no.
He gets in my car and he's bundled up like a turtle. Like a turtleneck, jeans, puffy jacket. It's summer in a hot climate.
He has all his clothes on him.
Oh, no. It's like Joey from Friends.
Could I be wearing any more clothes? He throws a massive bag and something else, I couldn't tell what, it was dark and I have a large van, in my back seat. I'm wearing a mini skirt and a button-down blouse and 6-inch heels. He suggests we go somewhere else than we planned. Exciting. My friend had told me this guy was spontaneous, like me. Her disposition is so optimistic. Mm-hmm. I am so cynical that both of these things would have been like massive red flags.
These deets right now are giving me anxiety. Pull up an hour away from your neighborhood to like the woods.
A lean-to.
In a van.
In the woods.
A lean-to.
And he he's wearing like a giant jacket, like all of his clothes. Why does he have a duffel bag that he just put into the back seat of your van? Like I'm
straight
concerned.
Up homeless, yo.
What's in the bag?
What's in the bag?
Oh, no.
He guides me to a beautiful dark lake. I'm sorry. All of this is serial killer vibes to me, and I hate it.
100%. There's heads in that bag.
Oh, God. He's like, romantic, want to help me bury these heads?
Listen, Tristan.
The moon was shining, and I could see so many stars. I'm not really dressed for this, but maybe he has something up his sleeves. I'm like, your murder.
More clothes.
More clothes. He pulls it out like those magician scarves, just like,
oh God.
I'm like, oh, cute, romantic. Then he pulls a fishing rod out of my back seat. I tell him I'm not dressed for this, and I also don't like killing animals. I tried fishing before and discovered it is certainly not for me. He objects, which, like, how can you object? Like, I'm telling you this thing is not for me, and he's like, no, it is. I'm like, what?
It definitely is.
Oh, my God. No, do not force me to fish. Like, oh, my God.
And I watch him fish for about an hour, ignoring all my hints that I'm not having fun or that maybe coffee was a better plan. He puts his fucking...
Oh, no.
He puts his fucking fish in my back seat.
No, abso-fucking-lutely goddamn not.
Also,
no.
Can you think of anything more boring than watching a motherfucker fish
for an hour? Oh, God, fishing is boring already. That's why people get so drunk while doing it.
Exactly.
Oh, God. He puts his fucking fish in my back seat, and I tell him I don't feel well. Let's stop at a gas station so I can fill up and then take him home. This part is the real deal breaker for me.
Oh,
now. Okay. Wow. Can't wait.
I mean, and it is, but I can tell you when I was first reading this, I was like, how? Like,
that's their dinner, isn't it? That's their fucking dinner.
It is. A fucking 100% is.
It's worse. It's worse. I mean,
no.
At the gas station, while I'm filling up, an African-American woman approaches his window. This is important to the story. She asks for help filling her tires with air, and I look and see her two kids in the car just looking exhausted. They were clearly on a road trip. Once again, we're in the middle of nowhere. He looks at her and goes, no, and turns away. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I get out and help her. She was on a trip. I get back in the car and ask him why he acted like that. He then proceeds to roll up his sleeves and show me his prison tattoos of swastikas.
Oh,
and tells me all about his sentencing for assault with a deadly weapon and a few other things I can't remember.
Get out of my fucking car immediately.
I drive as fast as I can back, freaking out. I have a racist, potentially dangerous, fish-toting weirdo in my front seat. I drop him off at his shack and let him get his stuff out of my car. As he's leaving, he goes, do you want to come in and meet my mom?
Fuck you.
Oh, my God.
I sped off, and I don't talk to the friend who set us up anymore. The end.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What is wrong with that friend?
Yeah,
that's
a friend. It's grounds to end a friendship. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 100%. It's one thing that you didn't know dude didn't have front teeth. This is different.
Yeah,
dude, I felt that in my stomach. Like, you're reading that story out loud, and I put myself in that poor woman's shoes, like, sitting there and having him roll up his sleeves and seeing that, and that fear that you have, and you immediately start thinking, like, how do I get out of this situation safely?
Yeah, because he's in your car. Like, he's probably much bigger than you. It's not like you can just like get him pushed out of your car easily. You're in the middle of nowhere.
I don't know where he revealed it. I think if it were still at the gas station, if they were still there, I would probably have like tried to extricate myself from there and in public,
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, I also know, yeah, there'd be a gas station attendant, so you could like go inside the gas station. But those middle of nowhere gas stations, you know, being from like the Midwest, where you can drive for quite a while out in the middle of nowhere, and there's just one single solitary gas station. Yeah. It is pretty scary, and I'm just happy she got out of that situation safely.
That's definitely an oh no cool.
Oh no, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
not
no.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. But anyway, he definitely caught his dinner.
Oh, God.
Took his date to catch his dinner for sure. For him and his mom.
Oh no.
Yoinks. Well, on that fun note, are you guys ready for my crazy love?
Yeah, that one, that last story felt like one.
I know. I'm like, I don't have to do one this week. Do I need to even do one this week? Oh, wow. Okay. So, all right. I got most of my information from a True Crime Daily article by Jason Matera, Killer Couples, Wikipedia, of course. And then I also got some information from a Rolling Stone article. And then also, okay, so do you guys ever do this? I will finish my notes, do my whole Crazy in Love, and then I'll go and look for a podcast that may have done it just to listen to it, just to have like, see how, you know, just to have the information flowing through my brain once again. Mm-hmm. In that, I found a true crime podcast that I'd never heard of before, and it was really fucking good. And I am going to recommend it now. And it's called True Crime Campfire.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually really good, and they did a really good job of this story. I actually subscribed to it because I was like, well, I want to check it out. And it doesn't seem like they have like a ton of reviews, like only, you know, a few hundred reviews, so I don't know that they're a huge yet. So maybe if you're looking for a new true crime podcast, it was really good.
Nice.
Okay, so this story is about a couple. I don't know how to like open it. It's about a couple, but it's about the gay porn industry and a gay porn industry murder.
I know this. Well, yeah, I'm a big Killer Couple fan, so I know.
Okay.
Yeah,
you've seen this one. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Harlow Quadra was born in 1981 and raised in South Florida in the Miami area. His father had left his family when he was very young. The family really struggled. They were, you know, lower middle class. He was, you know, his mom was struggling, you know, to just kind of make ends meet. She finally met this guy, a new man who seemed to be like a real godsend, helped support them. But unbeknownst to her, the mother, Harlow, would become prey to his monster, this monster that she met, and was sexually assaulted for the next 10 years until she was finally made aware when he left. Not surprisingly, Harlow struggled through his school and eventually joined the U.S. Navy. And in 2000, at the age of 18, he was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia. So he's like, I need an escape plan. I'm going to join the Navy. And for him, this was, you know, a great opportunity for him to really get away from, you know, this life. He's not really able to be himself. He struggled through school. He struggled through, you know, family life. It's just been really tough on him. The other thing that for him made him struggle is that he was a closeted gay man. So he wasn't able to live his life, you know, how he wanted. He's also, you know, all of this is he's coming to terms with his sexuality. The Navy at this time is, you know, great because it provided structure and escape. But this is 2000. So this is during the don't ask, don't tell period. And he still had to keep his sexuality a secret in regards to his, you know, being in the Navy. Regardless, though, he was still, you know, able to live his life outside of the Navy and met a handsome older man that spring in an online chat room. Joe Caracas is a 26-year-old and was raised in the Norfolk area. And very opposite of Harlow. It seemed to be like kind of a charmed life. He was an active member in his church. He eventually like moved all the way into a youth pastor role. He was very charismatic. He was top of his class. He's Mr., you know, everybody, every guy, like just, you know, everybody likes him. Just a really nice guy. Well, he really kind of, it doesn't really explain like how or what triggers this, but he starts to kind of become very, I think maybe overwhelmed leading a double life as a gay man, and really started lashing out and, you know, exhibiting lots of anger and exhibiting these, you know, real lashed out moments, so much so that the church asked him to leave. You know, he was really starting to be just aggressive, and it seemingly feels like it was out of nowhere at this point. But
I can't speak to it because I've never had to like hide what I have, but I've talked to someone in my family that I'm very close to who was in the closet for some time, had a lot of anger issues at one point. Not because anybody had said anything to him, but just anger, I think, maybe at
sure.
just the whole situation of the unfairness of it, because it isn't fair.
I can complete, and that was, I think, too, they kind of said that he had had kind of, like you said, not that necessarily somebody said something to him, but they did say that he had like a real moment where he had lashed out at the church because like an argument within there. So I'm assuming that this may have had something to do with his sexuality, with him having to hide it, with him having to struggle with, you know, being who he really is.
Yeah,
and living,
I feel,
his
like
authentic life.
Anytime you have secrets, that stuff is going to eat you up inside, and it's going to manifest in weird ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So after this point, he's like, you know what? I think that joining the military might be a good idea. I think that I'm going to join the Marines, and I think this will give me some structure, some stability. That lasted all of 2 weeks because the rigid lifestyle of the military and the Marines specifically, it just did not fit him and his combative nature at all. You know, he's like, nah. This ain't for me. This
right.
So
if you have a
too.
Fuck authority attitude, the
yeah.
Marines is not the place for you, my friend. It really
right.
is not.
Yeah.
The funny thing to me is that how easy it was. It's 2 weeks in. He's like, nah, never mind. Like, how the hell do you get out of the military so easy? I didn't think it was like that. I didn't think you could just be like, yeah, I changed my mind.
Able
I quit.
I was able to walk away from it. And mine was about 2 weeks, too, as well. I was signed on for Army.
How
right
do I not
of,
know this about you? Did we discuss this?
Yeah. I was, I was ROTC, ROTC.
Oh, I was in ROTC too. Yeah.
Yeah. Right out of high school into college or whatever. And it lasted all of 2 weeks before I was like, I don't like this. And I just stopped going. I didn't do it anymore. No.
You're actually still AWOL on their list.
I know. Probably. For you. I just did not show up anymore. And I was like 18 at the time. And so my way of coping with things that bothered me or distressed me was just to just ignore them and hope that eventually they went away. So
that's still the way I handle many of my problems.
You're like an ostrich. You just put your head in the sand. You're like, I'm not here anymore. Done.
You know what? Yeah, I don't. There's not a good time in my life to deal with this, so I'm just not gonna.
Yeah, so and it just doesn't I never exist. Have. So who knows? I might still be in the army. I just stopped showing up.
Oh God. Well, Joe Caracas, like I said, he's like, you know, he's this big buff dude. He's, you know, good looking. He's, you know, charismatic. So he quickly finds himself as an escort, as a male escort, putting, you know, those good looks and charms to work. He soon starts out as an escort in the service and becomes like pretty well known, like a high ticket. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting, you know, a regular list of clientele. Yeah, he is expensive. He's getting a real list of clientele. And he's like, you know what? It's time for me to break free from this company that I'm working for and start my own. Mm-hmm. This is when he decides to start his own escort business. And again, he's so busy that he starts to hire other men to work for his service, this escort service.
To take his clients.
Wow. I'm loving it so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Get your money.
Get your money. And you said he was in Norfolk, right? So I'm like, you right next to them DC peeps. Too far.
That's not close.
Got you a lady T?
But it is near like a bunch of military. So you're near Virginia Beach. So it's about Yeah. You're like Virginia Beach area.
Okay.
So it's about 2.5 hours away from DC. But it is a lot of military base, you know, and at that time, don't ask, don't tell. I mean, you could be definitely raking in the dough if you got a bunch of married men who don't necessarily want to start a relationship with some dude, you know, and live that down low life. So again, he's starting to hire men to work for his service. And when he met Harlow, he was actually like, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm doing this thing, but I also want to have a relationship. You know, when they met, Harlow was, you know, barely 18. Right. So he just started the military. He just got to in the Navy. But when they met each other, he was smitten, both of them smitten immediately. They were like, both extremely attractive men. They're both absolutely, you know.
How old's the other guy, just for reference?
Yeah, so he's 26.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's an older man, you know. I mean, not a lot older, but he's an older man. And so, like, he's, you know, he's got it going on, right? I mean, he's got a business. He's making money. And Harlow doesn't care how he's making the money. He knows that this is just, you know, for work's work. You know, leave your work at work. And, you know, this isn't about true love. You're an escort and you're making money that way. It's not a big deal, right?
Yeah.
And he looked at this older guy as like a protector. I mean, he really didn't have strong male role models in his life, as far as like older male role models. So I think for him, this was also like having something he's always wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And again, Joe had money and stability, all the things that he never really did, right? So he sees this guy as his protector, has money, has all these things, has this great livelihood. But to live together openly, Joe convinced Harlow that he needed to end his Navy career. He's like, if we're going to truly live as a couple, you're going to have to quit the Navy, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes sense, you know? So he was discharged as an honorable discharge because, again, don't ask, don't tell. He told, and he's like, they're like, so they let him go. Harlow had started to become bored, though. Like, he's, you know, kind of living off Joe. And Harlow's, you know, he was starting his military career and going into, like, the medical field and was starting to kind of build a life for himself. But now he's just kind of being a kept guy, you know, like, okay, great. I mean, yeah, this is a great relationship, but I'm also not contributing. I don't feel like I'm contributing in any way. Mm-hmm. So he decides that he wants to participate in some way in the relationship that will bring in some business. And Joe convinces him to become an escort. He's like, dude, you're fucking hot. You're young. You look young. You're going to fill a real niche market here. You're a total stud. We could be raking in the dough. And soon, Harlow becomes one of their biggest escorts. And they are raking in the dough. They're just bringing in the money. But Joe has stars in his eyes, right? And dollar signs. And he knows how successful Harlow has been in the escort service. Just how successful Harlow could be becoming a gay porn star. And the gay porn industry at this time is booming. In 2002, they started their own porn company. They were raking in the dough. I mean, they have fancy cars, a nice house. They're wearing diamonds. You know, they're living it up. With the bulk of their films, Harlow was the star and their target was the, quote, barely legal crowd. So the videos that they were targeting were a barely legal target audience, right? And as time goes on, Harlow is about to hit his expiration date. Because, you know, if you're targeting a barely legal audience, well, time don't stop. You're going to age, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what? We're going to have to make some decisions soon because your expiration as a, you know, barely legal porn star is not going to last forever. So we need to really start looking at maybe some other talent, some fresh talent, start bringing in some people that might be, you know, able to produce films for us, right? So at AVN, which you guys know AVN, it's mm-hmm. like the basically like the porn Oscars, and it's in Vegas every year. At the AVN, they decided to approach Sean Lockhart, who was making a big name for himself in the industry. He was working under the pseudonym Brent Corrigan. Sorry. Brent was thoroughly in demand, but was locked into a contract with a rival production company called Cobra Video. His manager, Grant, had been working to get him out of this contract, and Sean even threatened to say that he was underage in his first videos to try to get him out of this, right? So when the Cobra Videos guy, Brian Cochus, is found murdered and burnt in his home on January 24th of 2007,
uh-oh,
the police are immediately suspicious of Sean Lockhart. Let me tell you a little bit about this fucking scumbag. Brian Cochus lives in Dallas Township, Pennsylvania, and after a small stint in medical photography for an eye doctor, he'd started doing working with a cellular business venture, and which kind of fell apart after he was charged with sexual assault against a 15-year-old boy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yee.
It ain't good. And some of the things that I found out about it is that he had actually taken some video with this kid. He knew that this kid was underage. But when it all came down to it, the kid decided that he didn't want to go through with the charges. He didn't want to test. Like, I mean, obviously, the stigma attached to it, all those things. It's just, you know, and it fucking sucks because this shithead basically gets off on a bullshit probation sentence. And at that time, starts Cobra Video LLC, competing in the same barely legal in the same barely legal circuit, bareback, which is, you know, kid, you know, younger guys that look like they could be barely, you know, barely of age.
I really feel like somebody who has charges pressed against them for underage stuff with somebody who's 14 shouldn't be allowed to go into this career path, but okay.
Yeah.
It's all shit. And it does turn out that this Sean Lockhart really was underage and, you know, at the time, and, you know, when he started working with Barry. And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to tell them that you made me get a fake ID. He's like, I'm going to tell on you if you don't, you know, get me out of this contract. So as police are investigating all their outlets, the angry, you know, possible angry parents, possible disgruntled business dealings, they track down Sean Lockhart, but he's in San Diego where he has a solid alibi and geographically is just unable to have done this. The other thing is that when they find Sean Lockhart, they realize that they had actually just settled out of court and he is no longer under this contract, and they were able to, you know, free himself. So he really doesn't have, you know, any reason to want him dead anymore or to be rid of him, right? So that leads investigators to look at Harlow and Joe, because when they find Sean, Sean's like, well, I didn't do it, but I may have some interesting information for you. I happen to know a couple of guys who were interested in working with me. And when I talked to them about my contract and my problems with this dude, they were like, don't worry about it. What if he went away? And I think that sounded very suspicious, right? So they're like, thanks for the lead. So not only was Harlow's expiry upon them, but they were also living well beyond their means. So Harlow and Joe at this time are just, they're desperate to make this budding business and they need to take the next steps. So they're desperate to get their money moving. They're desperate to get, because they are just outspending themselves. Meanwhile, the police also discover an email to Brian requesting a meeting for the very night he was killed. They are able to link the address to an IP address in Virginia Beach. Well, that's interesting. That IP address leads directly to Joe and Harlow's home. So they send an email and they're like, hey, dude face, I'm looking to get into the industry. Maybe you could help me out. I'd love to meet with you. And that's basically the same night. I'm like, these guys didn't try very hard. They also rented a car in Harlow's, under Harlow's name, in his credit card. They were in Dallas Township at a hotel under their names with credit cards in their names. I mean, they didn't, it's like you guys didn't even fucking try. So finally, with a real lead, they are able to obtain a search warrant, only to find that Joe and Harlow had taken off to Florida. Police are then contacted by Sean and Grant so that they may be able to help. They had
They went from where? From LA to Florida? Or where were they?
No,
Virginia.
Virginia Beach.
Okay. Sean, I feel like you should just leave the country. What's going to Florida going to do for you?
I have no idea. I think that they were just trying to hopefully get out of under police suspicion. And they're just like, we're not home.
My guy, nothing makes you look more suspicious than fucking leaving. Off to Miami. Like,
right.
What?
So the police are contacted, like I said, by Sean and Grant, and they that they may be able to help. They had gotten a phone call from Joe and Harlow saying, like, hey, so looks like you're free now. Like, why would you know? You know, like, why? That's weird. That's suspicious. So you know that we're out of our contract. How do you know that? Right.
Yeah.
So they set up a plan with the police to meet with them and be wired. But Joe's suspicious and he's like, yeah, I'll meet with you guys. Yeah, let's have a conversation. Let's do it at this nude beach.
What?
Smart.
Yeah. But Grant, has the brilliant idea to plant a wire inside the key fob. So he's like, you know, nude beach, sure, but I'm still gonna need my keys, right? So he takes them with him and the key fob is wired, and which they leads them into a discussion of Brian's death. Harlow says that it was quick and they make so many incriminating statements. But the one thing that where the police were just like, okay, is that Harlow goes, don't worry, it was quick. And he said for him, it felt like a bit of a release. As disgusting and horrible as it was, it felt like a bit of a release. Like he was able to get some kind of payback against this stepfather,
yep,
in like kind of a surrogate way, right?
Yeah.
So he's, you know, for him, he's kind of like, this sucks, but this guy is a fucking piece of shit, right? Am I right? Well, the police are like, yeah, it sucks, but you're under arrest.
Yeah, yeah. Look, we get it, but you can't just murder people. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
That's not how this works. And so they were both sentenced, he and Joe. They're both brought up on charges. And, you know, everything's, you know, they're standing by each other until they're not. Just like any relationship. And Joe finally is like, you know what? Actually, I'm going to tell you everything. And it was all Harlow and everything. And he did it. But the fucked up shit is that his story has changed like every fucking time he speaks to the police. So there's not a real true thread of like how exactly the timeline went, like exactly how it was delivered. What we do know is, you know, the crime scene was they found the man on his sofa that was on fire. They found the smoke detectors laying on the table. You know, it was such an obvious murder scene when they got there that there was no doubt that this was not an accidental death by fire. Right. So, you know, and Harlow and Joe were not necessarily the smartest criminals when they're explaining this to their friends, you know, but the wild thing is that this story was made into a 2016 film starring James Franco, Christian Slater, Alicia Silverstone, and Molly Ringwald, based on the book Cobra Killer, Gay Porn, Murder, and the Manhunt to Bring the Killers to Justice.
What year did that movie come out?
2016.
Oh, dude, how did I miss this?
I will watch that. That is going to be some just like first degree trash. I can't wait.
Oh. And it looks as though that they really take the film, like the way I told the story was more to tell the story from the couple's aspect, from like them as a couple and their lives. But it seems as though the story, the James Franco, like that movie is comes from the angle of the Sean Lockhart, where, you know, he was brought in by Brian and the Cobra film and Brian Cochus as a shit. You know, so I'm interested to check out that movie, too. I watched the trailer for it. It does fucking look good. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, man.
Have you guys watched like any of those things? I think on Netflix, like the Hot Girls Wanted.
Yes.
And it's like After Porn Ends.
Mm-hmm. I've watched Hot Girls Wanted. Yeah.
Just about like the inner workings of the porn industry and like what happens when you age out or when you're done and everything. It's fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's actually kind of insane. I mean, Pornhub just like last month finally removed all uploads by like unverified users, and it's like, yes. Yeah, of course. Finally. You have, because things were, you know, getting reported that like a lot of the girls in these barely legal videos were not in fact legal, and it's like, yeah, of course, that's what happens when you just let anybody upload a video. Right. Of people having sex, like, and what did you think?
There's some people on that site that maybe did like one or two and were scared off by it or whatever, but then got like huge on Pornhub, like people sharing that one or two videos, and they're mm-hmm. like, yeah, my fucking life is ruined because I did these like two videos or whatever.
Thing. Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, the other side of it is, you know, the one good thing is that Sean Lockhart, he did actually get to go into film. He has made films beyond this that weren't porn. This is, you know, something that did kick off a career in, you know, different films and movies. And it's funny too, because I've read Tracy Lords. I read her book. Mm. And she was another one who got roped into underage porn. And, you know, fortunately for her, fortunately for Sean, you know, these guys were able to come out of it with, you know, a career or a path. And listen, I'm not saying that choosing to be a porn star is, you know, you should be able to make decisions you want for your life and your body.
Correct.
When you're of age.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the idea that, you know, what you were talking about, which they talked a lot about on like Hot Girls Wanted, which is like they chose to do one or two videos, they blew up, and then their lives were ruined. I think the idea that a woman or a man's life should be ruined because someone found out that they have an OnlyFans or that they've made pornographic videos in the past is ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
We all sell our bodies under capitalism every day. That's how it works. I don't understand how we can say that a woman is disrespecting her body or selling her body by doing this whenever we have people literally breaking their back doing construction every day. Like, what does that mean? What's the difference? It's just our weird puritanical beliefs about sex in this country.
Preach it.
Girl, preach.
I mean, that's where I stand on that. But on the other side of that, there is a lot of predatory behavior that happens within the sex work industry. And we can't forget about that either. Right. And we need to try and pass legislation and make it as safe as possible for people who choose to do sex work.
Yep.
And
destigmatize it. Yeah.
And also, though, like to your point, make it not safe for these fucking people who are trying to prey on underage and, you know, so, yeah. Well, that's my story. Woo.
Yeah. Nice. Wow. Good one.
Yeah. It was crazy. Ooh. I do kind of want to watch that movie, though. I was like,
I know, me too.
Sounds fascinating.
What are you guys watching this week?
Well, speaking of underage, I watched All of a Teacher on Hulu. It was not by choice. I watched it for your Angry Neighborhood Feminist episode. So if you want to know my feelings on that, you can go over and we did an entire episode about that whole trope and watched the show so that we could discuss that. I will say that the show did some interesting things that I haven't seen done with this trope before, in that it did spend time talking about the trauma that was inflicted on this male student for having this experience. So interesting, but I wouldn't recommend it. Don't put yourself through it. It's not really worth it. I did watch Soul, that Pixar movie.
So is it good?
Oh my God.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Oh,
it's
so good. I love
highly
Pixar.
Recommend it. Did I cry? Yes, I did cry.
Oh, 100. Yeah.
If you're just looking, and it's a Pixar movie, so it gets weirdly deep and existential. So you're not going to completely escape by watching it. But if you do want something that gives you that kind of like Pixar feel good feeling, that Pixar glow, then it will do that for you. And I do recommend that. So go give it a watch.
Nice.
It's good.
How about you, Cass?
We watched Wonder Woman 84. We watched that on Christmas. I just haven't thought about it because we also watched Soul like literally the same day. So that triggered that memory. I fucking loved it, but I'm just a big fan of action. And so I know here nor there on other people's thoughts about it. I just enjoy the escapism and I liked it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, that movie is weirdly polarizing. People are falling on both sides of that, but I'm still down to watch, and I know exactly what it is, like what I'm getting myself into. You're watching it to have a good time. All right.
And I think that this is the other like thing that's happened because we've had too much time to do this, is that we have become so over analytical of every single thing, and I'm also guilty of it. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody, but for me going into it, I guess for me going into Wonder Woman 84, I was expecting to just be able to sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride, and that's what I did. And so maybe I did allow myself to kind of not view it too harshly of a lens.
I think that's wise. Look,
yeah.
Life is hard enough right now.
Yeah.
Keeping to my randomness on across all the different platforms, I was looking to get something. I wanted more from Bridgerton. I wanted more of that. I liked that. I wanted more because I'm just like in that mood now. And so I searched around and I found Bleak House on Hulu. Mm. It has Gillian Anderson in it and Charles Dance.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah,
is it great? Do you like it?
If you're a Dickens fan.
I was going to say, is it based off the Dickens Bleak House?
Okay. Yep. Yeah, so it's...
And you started reading The Five, too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you like it so far?
I love it so far. I'm almost done. I'm on the last chapter.
Oh, God damn it. You're kicking my ass. I have, like, not been reading it. I'm in the middle of the book right now. So.
If I get into a book, it's very strange. I will inhale it. I will really. I'm a quick reader anyways, but, like, I cannot recommend. I know Keegan talked about it the other day on the podcast. Her writing and her insight into these women that we never talk about, the victims of Jack the Ripper, is so good. It's really powerful. There were a few parts that really affected me and really kind of made me confront. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that ideal of them all being sex workers is not true at all. Like, it's really fascinating. So definitely recommend that.
I really want to read, because she is the person who wrote the book that Harlots is based off of. And that book is called The Covent Garden Ladies. And I really want to read that.
I want to read that one, too. Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
That sounds real good.
Yeah. So, and I am really enjoying Bleak House so far. First of all, I think Charles Dance is one of the most terrifying people of all time. For people that don't know who he is, he played Daddy Lannister in Game of Thrones.
He is so scary looking.
He is terrifying. I am obsessed with him. I think he's great. Gillian Anderson is great. It's got a good cast and it's fairly entertaining. It's not as good as Bridgerton.
You know what? I want to see Charles Dance and Donald Sutherland in something together.
In an eyebrow off
contest. Yeah, so we can just be completely terrified. I want to watch it from underneath my bed. Mm.
So yeah, that's kind of what I have going on. But yeah, if you guys have shows that we should watch, books we should read, podcasts that we should listen to, or stories, bad date stories, we need them. Go to our one-stop shop website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers. Cheers.
This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.